Every team in the league has an AJ Preller trade story.
Yeah. You know, he's traded, I think, I want to say he's now taken 12 first round picks and he's traded 9 of them.
Yeah.
7 consecutive first round trade picks were traded. This guy's just the man. Like I had forgotten why, like, I had, like, kind of satirically embraced this guy as, like, my hero of baseball, which I don't really like. I'm honest about that. I think Major League Baseball is a bad product. But guys like this can get me in because he just doesn't care, and he'll just wheel and deal until the end. He treats it like a video game, and I respect that. Now, has it always worked? Clearly no. Clearly no. There have been some devastating blows for San Diego, or Slam Diego, as they like to call it. But I will say this with Preller. I do think it's fair to assess his tenure as a success considering how bad the Padres were before him. And then Sam will bring up the rebuttal about the influx of cash with this new owner. That is true, but it's really only been post-COVID. The Padres weren't in the top 10 in MLB payroll a single time of the Preller era before the COVID year. And even in the COVID year, they weren't top 10 in payroll. They were 11th. So they were then 8th in 2021. They were 5th in 2022, 3rd in 2023, which was an 82-80 season where they missed the playoffs with Machado, Tatis, and Soto, and Hader, and Blake Snell. Don't know how that happened to this day. That's one of the best rosters ever. And Cronenworth and a bunch of these other dudes. One of the best rosters ever assembled in Major League Baseball. They whiff the playoffs. They blow it up and nuke Soto. So they're 15th in payroll the following year. And they're substantially better, which made no sense. And then they're 9th in payroll last year. They go to the wild card series. And they're 7th in payroll around there this year. And clearly, it does not look like it's going to go well. So I think it's complicated to kind of evaluate. But if you want to say, after COVID, where they have had a top 10 payroll 5 out of 6 years, it's been underwhelming. I think that's probably an accurate way to frame it. Is that all on Preller? I'm not sure, because I think in 2023, just about every team in Major League Baseball would have swapped their roster for the Padres, and for whatever reason, their superstar players just didn't perform.
They missed the playoffs every single year before COVID under Preller, which was 7 seasons.
But they were, I mean, they were 28th in payroll in 2017. They were 23rd in 2018, 24th in 2019.
Sure, it's not an excuse for Tampa Bay, Cleveland, or Milwaukee, though. His first major contract that he signed once given money was Eric Hosmer?
Hosmer, yeah.
Which was a nightmare. Then he signed Manny Machado, which was a good contract. That was a winner. At the time, that was the largest contract in the history of American sports, by the way, if you can believe that. 10 years, $300 million. It looks silly now. And then he proceeded to extend Tatis, which was a good idea. I don't know if it's going to work, but it was a good idea. And then I think it has been underwhelming since, because he traded his whole franchise for Juan Soto and didn't get anything out of it. They signed Xander Bogaerts in the midst of that to an 11-year contract, which
bad
was
deal.
Mind-numbingly bad, and have not won anything since. And then they had an ownership. Their owner passed away, and then their TV deal fell out, and now they're in a bit of a limbo because their payroll is stacked. And last year he traded the number 3 prospect in baseball for a closing pitcher. This program loves Mason Miller. We love him. We've nerd alerted out to Mason Miller. Kwok has given us nerd alerts because of our stats on Mason Miller. Ludicrous to trade the number 3 prospect in baseball for a closing pitcher.
Yeah.
And now it's not going to work because they're going to have to trade him the year later for what is likely a diminished return. If not, just holding on to him with an under 500 team. I get why you like him.
It's here's kind of where I'm at, and this is a bottom line where I think that we can kind of come in unison with. Preller deserves credit for building the most sustained competitive period in Padres history, but the results have not fully yet matched the payroll for the extra resources provided by the Seidler ownership. Fair?
I don't think he's a good GM.
I don't think he's great.
I think he's been given a lot of money in the last 7 or 8 years. Things have changed a little bit since their owner passed away, and that turned into a whole ownership debacle after that and team custody stuff, but they still have a lot of money. He's handed out bad long-term contracts. He's traded away a ton of good prospects. Granted, he's drafted him. He gets credit for drafting him, but he doesn't get credit for giving up on him. He traded Trey Turner. He traded Max Fried. He traded Josh Naylor.
He traded all the guys to the Nationals. He traded
Abrams.
He traded
James
Wood.
Yeah. Mackenzie Gore, who hasn't panned out, but he was good at it. He's an all-star at one point. Yeah, he's traded a million prospects, and he hasn't won anything from it.
It's so funny.
And the roster keeps getting more expensive. That, to me, is a bad GM. But he's not going to lose his job because he does flashy stuff.
You can look around the league, and it's like, oh, that's a Preller variant. That's drafted by Preller. That's a Preller guy.
Half the league.
And then he just ships him.
I think he has a job, and I think he's kept his job this long because he got Tatis for James Shields. And that's the only thing that I think has kept him in his job other than spending money to have a consistently competitive roster that isn't good enough to beat the Dodgers and isn't good enough to win in October, which that is what the Padres are.
This year in 2023 are undeniable stains on Preller. I give grace because he's entertaining, and I think he's good for the league and the product, which I don't like, so I have to cling to people like this. And then also, the Padres for 46 seasons had five total playoff appearances. Five. They came into existence in 1969.
Yeah, they were bad.
And since Preller took the job, they have four. They have one more postseason series in the last 6 years of Preller ball with this increased payroll than they had in the rest of their franchise's history combined. So while I do get it's underwhelming given what the spend has been compared to other teams in the league in the same time frame, for the Padres, this has still been an upgrade, comparatively speaking, to the past. A lot of that is related to resources, admittedly, but they do have something to show for it in comparison to what the previous tenure entailed. The next step, clearly, for Preller and this core of players, which has been underwhelming in the last 5 or 6 years, there's no hiding from that fact, would be to win a pennant. Like, you gotta be able to have something tangible to point to at some point with this core of players, and that ain't happening this year.
I guess
year.
They have something to show for it, but I think if you gave the Brewers front office A.J. Preller's bankroll, they'd have four World Series by now in his tenure, so that's just my opinion on it. But he is fun. Faxon, while we're on the baseball, the trade deadline's in like a week. You will be back on Monday, and that is of the third, Monday, August 3rd, I think, is when you're back.
Yeah.
The trade deadline is that day. We are a week and a bit out. Do you think anything extravagant comes out of Atlanta? And do you think there's pressure on Alex Anthopoulos? How much pressure do you think is on Anthopoulos to do something about it?
There is a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure. And, I mean, I think a move is coming. I don't really know where it's going to be. The Braves are usually pretty tight-lipped when it comes to stuff like this, and they don't like leaking. Texter gets in and says, I'm hearing rumors that the Mets want to trade Lindor for Riley and Cam Caminiti. I don't think that's going to happen. I would love that to happen. I mean, I would drive Austin to the airport myself. I would love that.
I'm hearing rumors that Francisco Lindor is on his way back to Cleveland for David Fry.
Yeah.
That's the rumor I've heard.
I would love that to happen, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know where the Braves are going to go, and I think pitching is much more of a need than players at the plate. I think the players at the plate are coming, and they're just waiting in the wings right now. Look at the AAA lineup. You just got to get people healthy. I can't see a scenario in which the Braves go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers when they don't have a definitive nailed-down number two pitcher. And your number two pitcher right now, or who is allegedly your number two pitcher, or who is supposed to be your number two pitcher in Spencer Strider, number one, can't stay healthy, and number two, is not very good when healthy anymore because of the surgery. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with Atlanta. I want Scoople. That's unrealistic. So that means you're going to have to take a shot down the next tier of where the pitchers are. And again, I lean on Sam here because I don't like this sport and I don't like paying attention to the league. So you got to tell me who's on the trade block. I haven't done any research when it comes to this because I don't really care at the end of the day. Is Sonny Gray still out there? And is he available? Who are some other names?
Like I highly doubt the Red Sox who won 15 in a row before losing last night would be willing to sell off anything at this point.
Who's available? That's kind of
the
point
question.
Here.
That is the question. Detroit is 6 under .500, kind of hovering in that wild card race. The AL is not exactly going gangbusters this year. Would Scooble be available? Would the Braves be willing to fly in on that for a rental? I don't think they would. I think Detroit would ask for Hartman if they were willing to trade him. And I don't think Anthopoulos would do that.
Is there any reason that the Angels would be holding on to Soriano? That would be where the Angels are 21 games under .500 and their season's over.
No, there's zero logical reason why the Angels would ever hold on to anybody, but it's the Angels. And I hate to use that as my logic for this because it's lazy analysis and I'm aware of it. But typically, whatever you think the Angels' intelligent course of action would be,
they do the opposite.
They're going to do the exact opposite. So no, there's no real reason for a 41-62 team with what is an improving farm system, to give them credit. It's getting a little bit better, but it's still not great. There's no reason for a team like that to hold on to Jose Soriano.
Like, I would love to dive in for Trout and Soriano.
Trout's not going to leave.
And they're not going to trade Trout, obviously.
Stunned if Trout would.
And Trout, I mean, Trout's for his standard, has not been great this year. The OBP is really high. The average, I mean, he's still worth really three
good.
Wins.
He's still really good.
But for Trout standards, it's been eh.
Mike Trout moves the needle. Soriano moves the needle, I think, for the Braves even more. But I don't believe that the Angels would move him. He's 8-6 with a 3.43 ERA this year. He struck out 122 guys. He's got multiple years of team control. That is the exact type of player you trade. That is...
They're not going to trade.
That is the guy. You're not going to extend this guy. You know that. You know it, Angels. You know you're not going to extend the guy. But
I put the Angels are just the kings of Major League Baseball, and I view their like war room as the thing of Patrick and SpongeBob, where he's like, I have $3. That's how I view like,
I think
their
it's
entire
them,
front
it's
office.
It's them and the Rockies, and the Rockies are the same thing, where if there are pieces on the Rockies that you would think, oh, yeah, you know, we would sell these guys. We'd trade off these guys. They won't do it either. Which is why you're 22 games under 500 every year, and Kyle Freeland's your all-time leader in innings pitched. This is how you fall into this trap.
It is Patrick with the bottle on his head, just now, running an organization.
Now, you might be able to get Buster Posey to bite in San Francisco, but is Logan Webb somebody they'd be willing to trade? I don't think they'd be willing to trade Logan Webb. That's another guy that's extended until 2028. He's got a 3.87 ERA, but you know he's a playoff-proven pitcher. They would get a king's ransom for him if they put him up there. Luis Arraez could help somewhere. Probably not the Braves, but it helps somewhere. But would they be willing? It's a matter of, are these GMs willing to swallow their pride?
Are the Reds going to sell? Is there anybody in the Reds that can help us? They're 16.5 back. They're 7 under 500. They have a negative 63 run differential. The Pirates are in fourth place in their division. I don't think they're selling. I don't think anybody else in the Central is selling, so that kind of eliminates them.
I mean, if the Reds put Hunter Green up for auction here.
I know that name. That's my guy.
And I'm sure Kwok would be insanely frustrated here. If they put Hunter Green up for trade and just said bidding war, go crazy. 3.5 years of control. Because I've seen them rumored to be doing this, and it doesn't make any sense to me. Because you're not going to get anybody better than Hunter Green with 3.5 years of team control. But if they put Hunter Green up for trade, every prospect in the system for the Braves should be on the table. There should not be a single untouchable guy there. But I don't see that happening. The only other guy on that team that I would look at outside of maybe a bullpen arm if they have any, which I think has been a major problem for them this year, would be Spencer Steer. But I don't believe that the Braves have a need for Spencer Steer because they're set at first and third, regardless of what you think of Riley. So that would be it, pitching. They're not going to trade Abbott.
Texter says, any players on the AAA Athletics that we can call up? No, they stink.
Where are the Athletics right now? Let's do our...
The Athletics have the worst run differential in baseball because they can't pitch.
Oh, man.
Look at the bullpen.
Oh, no. What happened?
Look at the bullpen.
I'm going to win the Pirates A's war.
Look at the bullpen.
No, I know. Well, this is what we were worried about. This is what worried me. They're playing in a minor league stadium with a bad pitching staff.
Luis Severino has a 4.16 ERA, and he is like him and JT Ginn are the cream of the crop of the staff. Jeffrey Springs' ERA is under 6 for the first time in a while. They traded for Siv Dog the other day, which I actually
traded. I think they traded Siv Dog away.
Or they traded him away?
I think they traded him back to the Cubs. Aaron Civale is back to the Cubs. The problem for them is the pitching, but also Lawrence Butler got a long-term extension in the offseason, and he's running a sub-600 OPS. Brent Rooker, who has been one of the best players in baseball the last couple of years, was running a sub-700 OPS before he got injured. Outside of Kurtz, there's just and Langliers, who we love Langliers, there's just not a ton there. I mean, Jacob Wilson's a good player, but he's hitting 290 and he still has a 740 OPS because he's got zero power.
Yeah.
There's just the lack of upside there. I still like it long term for Houston, Atlanta, Vegas, but I don't think
JKG coming up is going to be nice for them too. He ruptured his testicle, so he's got
to
get
around
back.
The bush there. He had a horrible injury, but
he's got to get back healthy.
But they're just not good. But I also don't think they're in position to trade anybody because they extended a lot of pieces and they think that they've got their core lined up. If you're looking at trades and you're looking at the standings based on teams that have historically been willing to make moves at the deadline, I would say you're out of luck in the AL East. Toronto's not going to sell even if it's been a bad year.
What about Kansas City?
Kansas City would sell, but what are they selling from? If you need a starting pitcher, maybe you can go get Michael Wacha. Michael Wacha is consistent.
That's what I was going to say.
Maybe a
Wacha. Could you go get Lugo?
Maybe Lugo. One of those guys. That might be your bet because I don't think the Angels are going to sell. I don't think the Athletics are a natural trade partner for Atlanta. The Mets are obviously not going to do you any favors, even if Clay Holmes is available, which if he is, the Braves should show interest. And then the Reds aren't likely to put Hunter Green up, even if they say they might. So your options at that point become Robbie Ray, Michael Wacha, and scraping the bottom of the barrel elsewhere, and then adding to the bullpen, which I think the Braves will do because every team pretty much that's contending adds. Ken Rosenthal said the other day that the Braves are expected to be all-in buyers at the deadline, aggressive buyers.
You know who I would be buying low on right now out of the Royals bullpen, and this is going to be random, but I know the Braves would fix him.
Lucas Erceg.
Erceg would be the guy that
I
would
be buying
low on.
He's got no idea where the ball's going. But yeah, if you could sell me on a Michael Wacha, Lucas Erceg package.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the type of thing that I think would make a big difference for the Braves. Maybe not push him over the hump, but Michael Wacha's going to give you 6 innings, a 3-run ball or less.
Yeah,
every game.
I would go Wacha Erceg. That's the best kind of proposal that I've heard of any of these guys. And I think the price wouldn't be ridiculous enough to where they're going to, you know, rake you over the coals, right?
It'd be a lot.
It'd be a pretty penny, but I don't think you'd have to give up anybody that's like you're really losing sleep over from your farm to get Wacha and
Erceg. How many guys in this farm are you losing sleep over
like
getting rid of
three
anyway?
Total.
I think there's probably one for me. I think there's probably one. I wouldn't move Hartman unless it's for a big piece. The rest of them are pretty replaceable to me.
I wouldn't move Hartman. There's a couple other that I would. Like, I want to see a little bit more of Owen Murphy.
Sure.
I'm not trading Torrens. I'm not trading him at age 17, just turned 18, as a switch-hitting 6'2 outfielder.
See, I don't mind trading the 17- or 18-year-olds as much as it drives me insane, because at the end of the day, they're lottery tickets.
What about John Gill? A lot of our nerds on Twitter like him a lot. I like him, too.
If the question is, is trading this prospect going to get me to a World Series? I would send the prospect on the quickest Spirit Airline flight. Or I guess that doesn't exist anymore. Quickest
Breeze.
Frontier Airline flight. Yeah, Breeze Airlines that I can possibly find.
Yeah, all right. We'll take a quick break. Glad we're going around the league and I'm getting a little bit more educated. I'm also just grateful I don't pay attention to this anymore, if you want me to be honest. This is just stressful. It's stressing me out even looking at this stuff. 654 Roar is the number. We got a couple people loading up on the phone lines as well. We'll take some phone calls right after this on the Roar.
Speed on the bases, power at the plate, gold glove defense across the diamond. The Stars of Atlanta are ready to take the field.
Michael Harris going to sprint back, and he somehow makes the catch Willie Mays style and goes into the wall.
For every pitch from March to October,
we are your home for Atlanta Braves baseball.
Right here on The Roar.
The Upstate Sports Authority, 105.5 and 97.5.
The Roar,
where every day is game day.
From the locker room to your living room.
A lot of guys don't play good.
Sports talk is on the Roar.
Texting you.
And it's like the 800 eye rolls that you're getting when posting that as people like click through it and just don't acknowledge it. But if you're just tuning into the program, Lane Kiffin has said that he's deleted all social media to avoid distractions. And well, if you're Lane, then there's a lot of distractions that can come with that.
Do you think he deleted Snapchat?
No, I don't. He just got to a new city.
What?
Let's get Noah in here on the Pratt Injury Lawyers phone lines. Get some college football talk. 654 Roar. Noah, it's always a pleasure. Good to hear from you, brother.
Morning, y'all boys. Know it's football season when y'all hear from me 3 times in 1 week.
Oh yeah,
so
we're back, baby.
We're getting there. I'm calling about 2 teams that really we don't hear about in this area too much, and I just wanted to hear what y'all's thoughts were.
Okay.
Let's play a little win. If Sam can pull up the record for the UCLA Bruins, I'd like to play a little win.
Ooh, I like UCLA. I'm glad you bring this up, Noah. I like UCLA.
And I'd like for you to just go down the schedule and you give me your honest thoughts, win-loss.
All right, facts.
Because they're at total at 6.5 right now, and I got them at like... Granted, some stuff's got to go their way in that Cal game, week 1, for it to be 8, but I got them at 8.
All right, I got it up here, Faxon. Let's get this here, and then you and Noah can talk about this here. At Cal, week 1.
That's a win.
San Diego State, and you need to keep up in your head, Faxon, what your record is here. San Diego State at home, week 2.
That's a win.
Purdue at home, week 3.
That's a win.
At the Terps, week 4. Maryland.
That's a win.
4-0, off week, at Autzen. We will be at this game. You and I will be in the stadium in Eugene.
Yeah, that's the Ducks by 20.
All right, 4-1. Rose Bowl at home, Wisconsin.
That's a win.
5-1. Michigan State, 5-1 at home.
That's a win.
Oh, man. I see it. Nevada at home.
That's a win.
Minnesota on the road.
I'm going to give them a scheduled travel loss. That seems fair.
Row the boat. Illinois at home.
I think that's a win.
Michigan State on the road.
I thought they already played Michigan State.
Michigan
on the road. Yeah, that's a loss.
USC to close the year at home.
That's a loss. 8-4.
8-4. Noah, I can see it. I can see it, man.
Yeah.
It's not a hard schedule.
I like Chesney a lot. I'm going to say something. Nico Iamalieva played great football for the last 6 weeks of last season.
Iamalieva, but close enough.
And did not get any credit for it. That guy played pretty well in a couple games down the stretch for him. So
I'll tell you who's going to turn some heads this year, too, at that running back position. Wayne Train, Wayne Knight. That kid is special. He's small, but he's going to make a lot of plays. And they got a backup. Cameron Fox, true freshman. He's going to get carries. He's a little tank. I'm telling you, he's going to be good for them. It's going to be a little thunder and lightning back there. And like you said, Nico, I like Nico. I think he played well second half of the year, but the conference he plays in and the team he plays in, and with all the coaching stuff they had going on last year, you really didn't hear too much about it.
Yeah.
I think the schedule works out good for them to beat that 6.5. I'm not saying they're going to win the Big Ten. I like him to get me some money, though, this year.
Yeah, and you got to remember, I love Chesney, man. I think Chesney's a great coach. He brought in a lot of that James Madison team that went to the college football playoff a year ago. And I think that there are certain guys that are going to be able to punch up. Like, I'm looking at the edge room specifically. Sahir West, Aiden Gaboria, those are two guys that are going to be able to contribute. Former Notre Dame transfer for one of them. Those guys are good enough to play P4 football. There's no doubt in my mind. And then you bring in a Cal transfer in your linebacker room and Ryan McCulloch, and you bring in a couple other guys to backfill that room from Oklahoma and James Madison. Think you're in a good spot there. You were able to retain the majority of your secondary while also supplementing with an Ohio State transfer, a VT transfer, an Iowa State, a Utah transfer. UCLA is one of my teams that I think is being slept on. I'm in full alignment with you, Noah. I've got them at 8-4 for the upcoming campaign. But that week one game against Cal is very important for both teams' fates, and I tend to lean towards UCLA as the better football team.
Okay, and then my second team I wanted to talk about is you can get them at plus 800 right now to win the Big 12.
Uh-oh.
The Utah Utes.
Ooh.
I don't know what it is. I think it's pretty wide open. I like Dampier a lot.
Yeah.
I like Dampier a lot.
I like Devin Dampier. Injury concern there would be my red flag. You're never going to struggle to sell me on Utah football, to be honest with you. It's Morgan Scally now in his first year coming over for Kyle Whittingham, brings in Kevin McGivin as his offensive coordinator. And then on the defensive side, Colton Swan. They lost a lot of guys, obviously, with Whittingham going out the door, but the roster's not bad, and they were able to retain their quarterback and their running back that were both immensely successful a year ago, Noah. So I can see the sell here. I need to see what the schedule looks like, so whenever Sam's got that, we can run through it.
They play the Vandals week one. That's your client. Right there.
That's going to be a win.
They're going to beat them. They play Arkansas at home week two.
That's going to be a win.
I think Arkansas could be friskier this year, but they're going to beat them, I would imagine. Battle of the Brothers week three at home against Utah State.
Yep. That's a win.
Iowa State on the road.
That's a loss.
Even with the uncertainty there?
That's a loss. Yeah. You don't go into Ames as a West Coast team and go out and win easily, especially in September.
Kansas at home
That's probably a win.
Colorado at Folsom Field out on the road.
That's hard to project because we just don't know what they're going to be, but I feel inclined to give them a win.
It's belief or lack of belief in Juju Lewis. Houston at home.
I think that's probably a win.
At Nippert, they've got Cincinnati.
It's probably a
loss.
On
Halloween.
It's probably a loss.
BYU at home.
I'll give it to them.
You're going to give them BYU at home.
I'm going to give them BYU.
Okay. Arizona on the road.
Loss.
Believing in Fafita? Is he still there? He's still there.
Yeah, he is.
I don't know why I said if I know that.
I'm going to.
At TCU and then West Virginia at home.
2-0, 9-3. That's where I'm at. I think 9-3 is realistic, Noah. I can see what the upside shot is. There are a couple position groups I really, really like. I've got some concern with the offensive line losing all five of what their primary position group was a year ago, and then the schedule and the travel elements of the schedule can get a little tricky, but I still think it's going to be a good football team with a high floor. So, yeah, plus 800, plus 850, whatever it is to win the Big 12, I don't think that's bad value, because if they win one of the games that I'm talking about them losing on the road, then they could find their way in the the Big 12 championship game, rather, and at that point, you're riding a plus 800 ticket for one game. I don't think that's bad value.
And the thing is like, if you really like Utah, it's not unless you just have a bunch of money in your clip to throw at it. It's minus money to take them at over 8.5 wins this year, which is their projected. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like if you're going to think they're going to win 9 games, you might as well take the plus 800 and pray they can steal one or two more. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I see the vision.
My thought process.
No, I see the vision there, Noah.
I appreciate y'all as always. I just wanted to hear what y'all's thoughts were on those two teams. Interested to hear what the rest of this college football thoughts are. Y'all have a great rest of y'all's day.
Yeah, thank you for calling in as always, Noah. 654 Roar is the number.
Utah is one that I was way lower on than I should have been last year. And I think I had him at 7 wins preseason. And I got burnt for that. That was dumb. They ended up getting double digits, I believe. 11, I'm pretty sure, with the bowl game. I'm a little nervous about Whittingham being gone. It is a major feather in the cap that they were able to retain Dampier. He was fantastic last season. If you have him throw the ball too much, it's going to be a little bit hairy. But I never want to assume when a team promotes from within, and I never want to assume that things are just going to work when a team promotes from within. But they have had a pretty clear plan where they knew where they were going for the last so many years behind Whittingham, and they knew that Scally was going to be the guy. You have to feel like they are supremely confident in him and supremely confident in his staff. And you bring up the point, and you're absolutely right, that a lot of their departures were NFL-related and not necessarily transfer portal. They didn't lose a ton of guys to Michigan. Whittingham didn't nuke this roster to build his roster at Michigan. He built it with a few guys from Utah on the defensive line, especially, and then outside of that.
That was part of the kumbaya, too, was it was like it was a natural time for him to go in the sunset because of what the roster entailed from an eligibility standpoint.
And they have probably, under him, done what they're going to do, I think. They've gotten close, haven't gotten over the hump. When I look at the schedule and I look at the roster, I'm kind of in the same boat as you, 8-4 or 9-3. I always add a win to what I think Utah is going to do in my season predictions because I'm always wrong about them. So off the cuff, I look at it and I see 8-4. Applying Sam is always wrong about Utah bias to it, I would put him at 9-3. With UCLA, the sell is that the schedule's cake. I mean, that is a stunningly easy Big Ten schedule when you look at UCLA. I think they're going to lose that Cal game. I don't believe they're going to go into Berkeley and win. There's a lot of hype there for JKS, for Lupoi in year one. I think Cal's going to win that game. But San Diego State, Purdue, and Maryland should all be gimmies. Maryland will be a little tricky. College Park's a little tricky. And Malik Washington's fantastic. And I can't believe he stayed. But that one should be winnable for UCLA. Other than Oregon, there's not a game that scares me on this schedule. We don't know what Michigan's going to be. We have no idea what Bryce Underwood is. You think, logically, Bryce Underwood takes a step forward, right? But after what we saw last year, they were scared to throw the football with him. So you can't bet on that. Winning at Michigan is going to be very difficult. I don't think they'll do it, but I think they'll be competitive. And then USC is underwhelming every year under Lincoln Riley. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for me that they would pull one there at home and beat them. I could see anywhere from 6-6 to 9-3 with this football team. If Iamaliava is what he was the last 4 or 5 weeks of last year instead of what he had been at Tennessee the year before and early in the year at UCLA. I do think Chesney was the correct coaching hire, though, and he's going to make a world of difference for them and get them going in the right direction. They have to find a way to get butts in seats at UCLA, or else it's never going to turn around.
Yeah, they got to be able to reignite the fan base to some level. I'm interested to see how it works out. We'll talk a little bit more on the other side of a quick break about it. Delvin, I don't want to cut you off quick, so stick with us through a break, and we'll get to you on the other side. Final segment of hour number 2 with Faxon and Sam coming up right after this on The Roar.
The sports world never stops spinning. We bring order to the athletic calendar.
From sunup to sundown,
we've got you covered with the most up-to-date sports talk on the airwaves.
105.5, 97.5, The Roar.
Your upstate sports authority.
Folks, you need to go with Morgan Coleman for all of your real estate needs here in the upstate of South Carolina. The Clemson women's soccer alum is a native of the area and an expert in the upstate real estate market. We're approaching the end of the summer campaign for the summer market, so get in with her while you can. And summer in the upstate is more than just a season, as y'all know. It's a way of living. The evenings linger a little bit longer. Quiet luxury, thoughtful experiences, homes that reflect not just where you live, but how you live. If you're seeking something exceptional, go with Morgan Coleman. Coleman. Whether it's a refined in-town residence, a private retreat, or a legacy property near the water, don't keep falling into that trap of, well, maybe one day. Do it now and act on it now with Morgan Coleman Real Estate. You can get in contact with her very simply, four words online, Morgan Coleman Real Estate. She can make your summer dreams come true with a tailored approach to buying and selling with intention. Again, that is Morgan Coleman Real Estate online, and tell her Faxon at the Roar sent you.
The games may end, but the opinions never stop.
You're totally off base on this.
105.5 and 97.5, The Roar.
7 points. They needed 11 points, and they would have been advanced to the next round of the college football playoff.
At home.
And I think they would have rode that entire path that Miami rode. I think they were better than all those teams. They were better than everybody they played the whole year. And they lose 27-17 to Texas in a game that I thought they controlled a lot of it, and then they lost 10-3 to Miami in a game where, again, I thought they controlled a lot of it, but their defense was elite last year. Marcel made some big-time plays and big-time moments, but struggled in the playoff with, in all fairness to him, Beck was terrible too because the wind was gusting at 40 miles an hour, so the ball was getting held up in the air every time either team tried to throw, and Miami clearly had the better run game with Fletcher than Texas A&M did, and they had the better offensive line, so they won the game. The schedule's a concern this year for me for Texas A&M. They play a lot of really good teams, but I like the roster, and I think it's hard to not be really high on what they've established with Elko. They bring back a lot of their defense. They're able to supplement at the transfer portal in positions where they needed to plug holes, which was primarily on the D-line and on the O-line. I like a lot of their additions there. And then at running back, it's going to be a big question as well. With Le'Veon Moss going out, it's going to be an increased workload for Reuben Owens, and some of these freshmen are going to get a chance as well. So I like it. I think I'm probably around the 9 range with Texas A&M just because of the schedule, maybe 10, and that could be more than enough to get them in the playoff.
Yeah, and I just want to say this. While Weiss, don't take Jarvis out the lineup. Put Kim on the bench and release him because that kid is doing good right now. He deserves to lose the job.
Yeah, for sure. Delvin, thanks for the phone call. Thanks for checking in, brother. Yeah, absolutely. Sam, we differ in our opinion on Marcel Reed. I don't know if I see it this year with A&M, and I loved them last year. I had them in the playoff. I figured they would make a deeper run than they actually did, and the wind really impacted their season. There's no real other way to put it. I mean, they couldn't throw the ball. They had Concepcion and Craver, two of the most dynamic players in all of college football. They couldn't get them the ball when it mattered the most, and that ended up costing them their season a lot earlier than I thought they should have gone out last year.
I like Elko, and I like the mindset that he took at Media Day yesterday where he told his players, you see that trophy cabinet? It's empty. That's what you're trying to fix. That's your motivation for playing this year. It's a good mindset to have because it is. There's nothing really in there. I trust that their defense is going to be good, but you lose multiple NFL players off of your D-line. You lose quite a bit of talent across the board on that side of the ball. My faith in the defense being elite is not as high this year. Granted, it's still going to be a top half of the SEC defense. This is the most 9-win football team, borderline 10-win football team ever for me either, too. I would be stunned if their win total was anything other than 9.5, which I don't know what it is, but I'm guessing it's 9.5 or at worst 8.5. I trust Marcel Reed and Texas A&M to get to the playoff. They did it last year. They're going to run the ball really, really well. They rebuilt their offensive line on in the tackle positions. They have to replace Chase Besantis on the inside. But I do believe they can do that. And Reed gives you a level of improv ability at quarterback that no other QB in the country can. Outside of Dampier and a couple other guys.
I mean, the guy looks like Lamar Jackson. It's just a significantly worse version of him.
Nobody's Lamar Jackson. Not even diet Lamar Jackson. That's a one of one. But I don't trust him to throw the football. I have watched Marcel Reed now for a year and a half. He is unbelievable when he's out of the pocket and he's using his legs. But if you have him standing in the pocket and you have a competent defense on the other side of him, what is he going to do? He's going to throw the ball 4 feet over his receiver's head. It's what he did against Miami when there wasn't wind gusting. It's what he did in the first half against South Carolina in a game that Shane Beamer said yesterday we're not going to talk about. But for Texas A&M, you barely get out of Dodge with a win there against a bad team, and you looked lifeless for one half of football, and then you lose to Texas, you lose to Miami in embarrassing fashion, and like Delvin said, that's what your takeaway from last year is. It's not the fact that they started the year 10-0. It's the fact that they could not get it done down the stretch again against teams that they were likely to see in the playoff or close to it, and then in the playoff against Miami, they couldn't get the job done. You got to beat Texas if they're on the schedule, and they didn't do it last year with a down year for Texas with the roster talent where it is. And then they embarrass themselves against Miami. I find it difficult to buy all the way in on that offense in the postseason because of Marcel Reed.
Texter gets in and says, don't forget A&M was the major benefactor of an extremely easy schedule last year. I don't really agree with that. They won in South Bend. They won in Baton Rouge. And they won in Columbia, Missouri. They were underdogs in two out of those three games. If the silver lining there is for an SEC schedule, favorable,
that's
maybe.
That's what I was going to say. But like, they played Notre Dame. They beat Notre Dame. They're the reason Notre Dame didn't make the playoff.
They beat Notre Dame.
That game ending the way it did. I'm not going to say this is a hard schedule because it's not. Auburn last year, they barely beat. And that's not a hard game. Mississippi State is not a hard game. They blew them out. Florida, not a hard game last year. Those were all at home. At Arkansas, not a hard game. They won by three. At LSU last year was not a hard game. They blew them out. But that's not a difficult game on the schedule. At Missouri, Missouri's a four-loss team every year. That's what they are. You should win that game. Barely beat South Carolina. Now, barely doesn't matter. They still won. But for an SEC schedule, the Texter's right. That is not hard at all. Notre Dame gives you a little bit of a bump there. Absolutely. However, the rest of it is underwhelming, and they lost to Texas.
For what it's worth, Texas A&M was like minus one, or even, I think they opened as underdogs against LSU. I think there's a little revisionist history with the way that their season played out. And the same thing to be said about Missouri, where the spread was under a touchdown in that game. Missouri was a good team last year. At that point in time, LSU's season wasn't completely done and dusted. They were 5-2 and playing for their season and playing desperate in a primetime standalone game at home. So I get it. It's easy to look back at the little numbers and records and see that Brian Kelly got fired and say, oh, well, that was really going into the game. Texas A&M was like a 1.5-point favorite. That was like a 55% implied probability they won that game. And they didn't just go in and win. They went in and kicked their butt up and down the field in Baton Rouge, came back after the bye week against a Missouri team that was in the exact same situation that LSU was in, which is playing for their season and playing for their playoff livelihood. And if they lose, it's over. And then they whooped their tail on the road, too. I think that deserves credit. And then they turned around and came back from down 30-3. Like, I get what we're doing. It is a grind every week in the SEC. These are more talented teams than a lot of other teams and other conferences that people are playing. Like, Florida had a top 15 roster. Arkansas, we talk about them. That's not an easy team to play. They played a lot of teams tough last year with Taylen Green.
That's a poorly coached Florida football team.
I don't disagree.
Arkansas was not good still through all of it. Through all of that, that should not be a game where you're winning by three.
No, it shouldn't, but you were only a 7-point favorite.
If you want to if you want to take the LSU game and give them credit for that, you can. That was a fine football team, but that's a middle of the pack SEC team last year is what they ended up being. They had no offensive line play, a banged up quarterback, and a lame duck in the end of it head coach. So like from an SEC schedule perspective, and that's what we're comparing it to, I think it was easier. And then they floundered down the stretch against the two teams that they played to close the year when all eyes were on them. Texas A&M was ranked what going into that Texas game? 1, 2, or 3?
I think they were 2. They were either 2 or 3. I'm not excuse. The Texas thing is undeniably a little bro thing, but like Texter getting in saying LSU stunk and so did Missouri. Missouri did not stink.
Missouri was fine.
Missouri lost by 3 to Alabama. Their quarterback broke his leg. Then they lost by 7 to Vanderbilt with their backup. They lost to A&M at home, and then they lost by 11 to OU because their quarterback was playing on one leg.
Missouri had a nasty rushing attack last year.
If Bo Prippula didn't get hurt, Missouri goes to the college football playoff, period. End of conversation. They needed 3 more points to tie Bama and send it to OT, and they threw a tipped interception. Their post-win game expectancy for that one was 53% against Bama. They lost at Vanderbilt, where their post-win game expectancy was 71%, and they scored 10 points because their quarterback was hurt. Then they lost to Oklahoma, again, by 11 points. They were favored in the post-game win expectancy in that one. Guess who was hurt? Their quarterback. So
the quarterback wasn't even good, to be fair.
I don't think that this was like a bit. They were playing Matt Zollers, dude. Do you know who that is? We would think he was an intruder if he walked in the station right now.
Not a great football player. But again,
Missouri was a good team last year. Yeah. I'll stand on business there. That was a really misleading record for them by the end of the year. If you want to say that LSU stunk, that's fine. I still don't think it's easy to go into Baton Rouge under the lights and win and put up 49 points against a team that was playing for their livelihood as a almost favorite in the game. Like Texter says, if Mizzou would have had Bo, it would have been a pretty good win, but they couldn't throw a forward pass after he got hurt. Exactly.
But it wasn't. So it does make it an easy win for Texas A&M. Zollers was 7 for 22 in that game. That matters when you talk about Texas A&M. And it matters especially when you look at how the year ended and then you walk back a month or two and you say, oh, well, was it because of the schedule outside of the Notre Dame game that we were where we were? Because they couldn't stop the run down the stretch and they couldn't throw the football consistently down the stretch. Against better teams or healthier teams, if you want to call it for Missouri, and I don't disagree with you on that, in the middle of the year, I do think things look a little bit different for Texas A&M. They also lost a boatload of talent to the NFL, as much as anyone in the country. So, this year compared to last, I'm not 100% there all the way. And a lot of it is Marcel Reed not being someone I trust entirely to throw a football, and that's their quarterback. But I do think Elko's a good football coach, and he will have them in the hunt at the end of the day. But if they can't beat Texas, the fan base isn't going to care, and the fan base isn't even going to care if they win a measly playoff game if they can't beat Texas this year. So things have to change. They got to get better. They got to improve on last year. It was a good starting point, even if it didn't end the way you wanted to, but it has to improve this year. They close with Tennessee, Oklahoma, and Texas this year, Faxon. Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Texas with a bye week in the middle.
The schedule is a concern to me, and that's a big-time like issue here, in my opinion, as to what they could run into. It is vastly more difficult this year than it was last year, but I do think that there's a little bit of a revisionist history with that schedule last year, and it was more difficult than people realize. I will say that. Missouri couldn't do anything after what's-his-face got hurt, Pribula, so I get that. Texter says Texas A&M 9-3, ranked 14. Yeah, like that's kind of where I'm at too. I think that football team screams 9-3 this year.
That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I think we're aligned here. While we were not aligned last year, I think we're actually, funnily enough, very aligned for what the expectation is going into the season. Let's pick G Money's brain about it. Grayson Mann from TigerNet joining the program here in the upcoming hour. We'll talk a little Clemson football. We'll ask him about some stuff as well. Have Texter getting in asking to explain post game win expectancy. I'll do that to lead next segment.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson, Greenville Anderson, WAHD-AM 1560, Cowpens, 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar.